everybody, and welcome to Around the NHL. I'm Randy Moeller, and joined, as always, by my co-host, Katie Gause. Katie, how are you today?
Hey, Randy. Good. Excited about this new podcast that we've got. Going to cover a lot of topics. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I mean, very interesting. The NHL has so many subplots and topics on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis, and we're going to try and touch it all. And although we will touch a bit on the Panthers from time to time, this goal of this show is to explore the hockey world outside of South Florida. And each episode, Katie and I will look around at some of the biggest storylines around the league while also chatting with some special guests, players, reporters, people that make the news, the players, the reporters who report it, and also to the hockey operations staff that kind of mold the fastest and the greatest game in the world. And on this inaugural episode, we'll chat with TSN's Ray Ferraro, their number one analyst, and ESPN's Emily Kaplan. But first, Katie, what is going on right now?
Yeah, I mean, we've got a lot of topics to cover, but I think first and foremost, what really sticks out is obviously that NHL trade deadline we just passed, and a lot of moves happening from a lot of different teams. And so, Randy, what I want to know, you know, at least looking at it, I've got my opinions, but you know, what sticks out to you as, you know, maybe some really strong moves, some acquisitions that you really liked, teams you think that maybe kind of won out at the deadline?
Well, every trade deadline every year in the National Hockey League, you've got buyers, you've got sellers, you've got teams that recognize, you know, we're just not going to make it, whether it's make the playoffs or in some cases, even though they maybe even squeak into the playoffs, they're not a Stanley Cup caliber threat. So at an ownership, management, and even coaching level, coaching staff level, these teams have to really come to an understanding of not only where they're at this year, but where they're going to be in 1 year's time, 2 years. A lot of teams plan on a five-year plan. And we saw the moves. Some teams really didn't do anything. They sat pat. They liked their hockey club. They don't want to disrupt the chemistry maybe. But you had a lot of them. I thought there were some winners and losers. There wasn't a whole lot of shocking trades at the trade deadline. I thought Washington paid a deep price, but they pried Anthony Mantha from the Red Wings. Mm-hmm. I think that really helps Washington. They feel that their window right now with Alex Ovechkin and TJ Oshie and the veteran team that they have, their window is really getting small, and they want to make a good run at it this spring. Stevie Yzerman from the Detroit Red Wings, he's been very methodical in his building of the wings, acquiring draft picks and prospects. So the Washington Capitals, I think they paid a deep price, but they got the man that they wanted in power forward, Anthony Mantha. The Toronto Maple Leafs,
That was a good. I was going to say bringing in Nick Foligno. That one stands out for sure.
Yeah, they're going all in. And they've given away a handful of draft picks and prospects. I don't think they really value what the draft can do for a hockey club in the long term. But they're close, and they've got so much talent, that core that they have. And then bringing in David Rittich in goal, in depth and goal, I thought that was a very strong move by the Toronto Maple Leafs. Columbus is starting their rebuild. The LA Kings continue to rebuild. They made some moves to acquire draft picks, and they're asking their fan base to be somewhat patient. The Buffalo Sabres, they sold everything that they could, and why not? It's been a train wreck of a season. They've got to start somewhere. Boston is, I think, Katie, is a lot like the Washington Capitals in the sense, hey, Boston has not had a very good year, very inconsistent.
Yeah.
And I think in a desperation move, they're giving up a little bit to get Taylor Hall. The big question, Katie, Taylor Hall has not been the Taylor Hall that we're used to after just a few years out of winning the league MVP, the Hart Trophy. And whether he's going to make a difference or not, your views on that move by the Boston Bruins?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like you said, it clearly, you know, not the player that he was in the past, especially reflected in the fact that, you know, teams were only offering up, you know, third and fourth round picks for him in a lot of cases. But with the no move clause, he really had the opportunity to pick wherever he wanted. And it was pretty clear that Boston was the spot. You know, interestingly enough, you know, they throw in that Curtis Lazar as well from Buffalo and trade out Anders Bjork. I really feel like he could revive his game there, but right now I think the Bruins in general are going through a real struggle, and Taylor Hall hasn't been playing, you know, at the level where he's going to come in and suddenly just turn on a switch and change things for them. I mean, he had his first game ironically against Buffalo, and Boston was only able to win it in a shootout. So, you know, certainly the talent is there. I've heard a lot of, you know, people commenting on it, saying they think there's still more in the tank for Hall, but, you know, he's had an interesting run so far, and, you know, it's going to be something to watch for, because I truly don't know if they have what it takes, you know, with him, you know, to revive that career.
Well, and I think maybe Boston, we can put them in the category as well, as their window was starting to close, you know, Patrice Bergeron and Krejci.
Right. And I mean, you saw the departure of Chara too. I mean, that was another huge piece that, you know, that really, I feel like, damaged them in general, in losing a captain, losing such an instrumental player. You know, they're definitely increasing in age, and I kind of expected a little bit more from them in terms of the season struggles they've had, you know, trying to, you know, obviously capitalize while they still have these players, because like you said, the window definitely starting to close for them.
And don't go to sleep on the Tampa Bay Lightning, even though they've been inconsistent over the last little while. They had that experienced D-man from Columbus, David Savard. I think he's going to fit in very well. I believe it's all about addressing the need back in the defensive play for the Tampa Bay Lightning. Everybody knows they can fill the net, the highest scoring team in the NHLs. But I think David Savard is a nice addition. Tampa Bay continues to make the prudent moves that they feel to address certain areas. And I believe that they have a winner there in David Savard. The Devils adding valuable draft picks as Tommy Fitzgerald continues to put his stamp on a young but talented roster. And then on the last one that we'll talk about a little bit is the Florida Panthers. I think they added impressive depth in all positions. Bill Zito addressing certain needs for the stretch run. You can never have too many players on your roster. And although this year is really unique, we've seen it, how the Panthers have been able to insert players on a different certain nights and keep everybody fresh. They want to be healthy and productive going into the playoffs. They did themselves very well at the trading deadline, and we'll have to see. There's some question marks, but they believe that the chemistry can be created with these players coming in. The Panthers lineup will look a lot different once they get into the playoffs than it did on opening night when we started the season back in January.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think the Bill Zito special this year has sort of been bringing in players who have a lot of potential, who've seen their careers maybe take a little bit of a downturn, but have a lot left in the tank and have the opportunity with a change of scenery to really revive their game. You know, one player that really sticks out that I like in particular is the Sam Bennett acquisition. You know, a lot of people talking about how he plays some of his best hockey in the playoffs, which is, you know, perfect timing coming in here for that last stretch. And I think he's got a lot left to prove, still a young guy. And then Nikita Gusev, you know, coming in, you know, after being bought out, kind of the Bill Zito special deal where it's the 1 year, $1 million, you know, put up or shut up, basically see what he can do. And again, you know, the other thing, Randy, you know, that we kind of talked about a little bit with Ray, who we'll get to in a second here, but you know, the expansion draft is coming up and a lot of teams are having to kind of factor that into a lot of the decisions that they're making as well. Do you feel like teams maybe were being a little bit more methodical with some of their choices, knowing that, you know, Seattle is, you know, lurking in the distance?
Yeah, I believe there's a number of teams, including the Florida Panthers, that have a long memory. And what happened with that expansion draft a few years ago with the Vegas Golden Knights, a lot of teams maybe weren't prepared. They couldn't see the future after the expansion draft, and it hurt them. And I think we can safely say we can put the Florida Panthers in that with some of the moves that they had to make in order to protect certain players that really didn't work out.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, on that note, we'll dive right into our first guest. Great conversation coming up here with Ray Ferraro. Like Randy mentioned, 18-year NHL veteran, lead analyst for hockey at TSN. Some great stuff to say, and boy, he's a talker. So we'll let him join us right now. Here's Ray Ferraro.
Let's bring in Ray Ferraro. And Ray, you cover the NHL, lead analyst for TSN up in Canada. You see it, you report it. What are you seeing? And now we're getting into the final stretch here, and we're starting to see a lot of separations from the top teams in the NHL in their divisions. But some teams like Nashville, like San Jose, even the Montreal Canadiens are making a move in their division. How do you size up the NHL playoff race right now?
Well, good to see you guys, first of all. And it's been just a remarkable year, hasn't it? I mean, it's so hard to get a handle on which teams are really good and which teams keep beating the same four teams in their division all the time. And so, you know, when I watch Florida on television, for example, I have no reference point to the teams that they're playing, because in the North Division, we see the same seven teams all the time. Just the same in your division. You see those same groups of teams and you're like, I think they're pretty good. I think they're pretty deep, but I don't know how they would be against another team. The playoff picture is really interesting because I think guys are getting worn down here. Physically, yes, by the amount of games that are piled into a short period of time, but mentally in particular, I think some guys are just getting worn out. Now, I didn't quite understand this bubble thing or living in a really restrictive way until I went to the World Junior Tournament and around the Christmas holidays in Edmonton. And TSN does that tournament. And for over 3 weeks, we were in a bubble. And literally, guys, I was outside either my hotel room, our meal room, or the arena, maximum 2 minutes a day. Like, that was it. So I couldn't believe how you settle into this, like a fog. And so the guys go on the road and they're stuck. They can't go anywhere. And look, they're all playing. They're all, you know, in the NHL, they're all living their dreams, but it doesn't mean that it's easy. And I think when you struggle as a team, this becomes something that really, really kicks the heck out of you. I don't think teams are able to fight through. So the reserve tank isn't there. So these separations you're talking about, I think they're happening all over the place. The teams that are getting hot now with 15, 18 games left, they feel good about themselves. You know, yeah. Nashville gets Roman Josi back. It's a completely different team with Roman Josi in the lineup and out. UC Saros is, you know, he's playing lights out for a month. And so the teams that are hot, I think can stay hot. The ones that are, you know, just treading water, it's going to be really hard to make up ground.
Ray, you call this game for a long time. You've seen the changes. And that's specifically my question to you is, how have you seen the game at the NHL change? And not only how it's changed, but how the players have changed to influence what we see, what we watch on TV on a nightly basis.
In the last 15 years or so, it's almost unrecognizable to the game, Randy, you and I played, where it was heavy, it was physical, everything was a grind. The skill players, you know, they had to fight for every inch of the ice because basically there were no rules. I mean, like, you know, like I use this example all the time when one of your old teammates in Quebec, Peter Stastny, one of the great players of the game. So we would play Quebec, and Peter Stastny was 6'2" or 3" and about 215 pounds. Yep. When I'm playing against him, the only way I could slow him down was I would grab his stick. And I figured if three hands were on it, it probably wasn't going to work as well as two. And then the ref would yell, "Let go." So I'd let go of his stick and then I'd grab it again. And the reason I give that example is, as the rules have evolved, the players have gotten lighter, faster, more athletic, more agile. Like, look at some of the moves these players make. Yeah. at the speeds they make them. The skill level is incomparable to any other time in the history of the game. Like, when have we seen players skate like Cale Makar?
Yeah.
Like, what he can do in Colorado on his edges to elude people, it's remarkable. Yeah. I do a lot of Toronto games. Watching Mitch Marner and Austin Matthews. Randy, like, could you imagine defending against those guys?
No.
Like, how hard it would be.
I think the biggest thing, if I reverse it and ask myself, and I've thought about this, and I talk about it on our broadcast as well, if you have to zero in how the game has changed, and I think you just mentioned it, is you can go to the defenseman, the skill of the defenseman. There's no such thing as a stay-at-home, just shovel it up the boards defenseman. You can't play anymore in the NHL. You've got to be able to skate. You got to be able to handle a puck, turn back. You got to have the skill to be a part, because the NHL right now is all about attack. It's all about offense. And if you're not coming with a five-man rush up the ice, you're not going to have any success at all.
I think the one thing I missed when the rules changed, like in my view of what was going to happen, I thought all this speed and all this skill and less interference was going to lead to way more offense. What I didn't realize was all of that speed was going to be disruptive defensively. There's no time to do anything. And so that puck, as you mentioned, man, if you're not moving it fast, you're dead. You're finished. It's going to go nowhere. And I think the one beef I have is people that think that the game isn't physical anymore. It's not physical like we used to play physical, but man, these guys are going so quickly. Every bump is like a minor car crash. Yeah. And if you look at the NHL and compare it to the NFL, I compare these two because they're the most physical of sports. The NFL used to, like, their safeties and defensive backs used to maul receivers all over the place. And the NFL said, hey, wait a minute, these games are boring, so we need to open it up. And so they gave more advantage to the offense to try and complete passes down the field. Well, look what happened to the defensive backs and the safeties. They changed. The athletes they looked for changed.
Right.
In our day, a defenseman like Quinn Hughes, who was drafting him? Nobody. Now, yeah, seventh in the draft, right? That's what you want. You want Cale Makar. You want Quinn Hughes. You want Miro Heiskanen, right? There's very few players that could move around the ice like Aaron Ekblad at that size. Like, those, that's just a rare player. So now it's mobility, it's agility, it's athleticism, and we see it all over the league. And to me, the game's in a great place because of it.
Well, and Ray, you talk a lot about the differences between now and when you guys were playing. And I know you two missed each other by about a year, but you know, I did a little digging, and I mean, you have quite an incredible accolade list coming from your time in the WHL. Just, can you talk a little bit about what it was like, you know, at that age, you know, to be having the success that you were having, and just, you know, how that really, you know, led to the career you were able to establish for yourself, you know, as a player in the NHL?
Well, you know, Katie, it was, I was like every other Canadian kid that played the game. I think I never assumed I was going to do anything else but play in the NHL without knowing how hard it was going to be to get there. Right. Like, you play and then you're good enough and you go to the next level and then you're good enough and you go to the next level. But to me, it was just the next team, right? I loved the game so much that I just wanted to play. But at that time, at my size, there wasn't a whole lot of guys that were going to be successful. So I somehow, I guess, felt that I was fighting everyone all the time. I was too small, I wasn't fast enough, and I wasn't tough enough. I kept hearing it over and over and over. And so, but I kept scoring. So I thought, well, that's got to matter eventually. But I never assumed that I wasn't going to make it. But it wasn't until I was 19, I got traded to Brandon. And this is really, maybe an example of where I was in my career. I was part of a trade, a 5-for-1 trade in the Western Hockey League. I was one of the five. right? So I got traded to Brandon, Manitoba, about 2,500 miles from home. I'm 19 years old. I don't want to go. It's cold. And you know, and I'm out in BC and British Columbia, and I want to stay out there. But my dad, who never played hockey, but just, man, he just had a great feel for just about everything. And he knew me well. He said, you know, and maybe he was overlooking I was part of the five in the trade. He said, but he said, Raymond, you know, these guys made a trade for you. You should honor that trade. You should go give it a go. And so I went there and I scored a hat trick the first game, scored a hat trick the second game, and I was off and running. I scored 108 goals that year. It was not until that year where I went, you know what? I think I can do this. Like, I think I can be an NHL player. And then I got to Hartford, and I was at training camp for 3 days, and they sent me to the American League, and they told me I was too small, too slow, and not tough enough. And so I was like, well, hell, that didn't really matter much, did it?
You score all those goals. You know, Ray, I know we could talk for probably 3 days on stories from the Western Hockey League, riding the bus. Like we always say, you know, what was it like back then? And I used to say, well, it was bus hair, bus face, bus breath. We were on the bus the whole time. Remember those days you'd pull into a team and the coach would say, I remember we had our coach, John Chapman. It was always when we went to Billings, Montana. Okay, you remember Billings. And he would say, it's either Coors or Cokes. So if we won, there'd be a case of Coors on the bus. If we lost, it was Cokes. And if we got shut out, he would get the bus driver to pull over in the side of the road. And there would go to the Cokes. There would go to Coors. And there would go those awful sub sandwiches that they used to feed us as well. They would be right in the ditch. And then he'd turn around and say, oh, my little darlings, you better get a lot of sleep because after the 6.5-7 hour bus ride, we're going to have a little skating party. And then he would turn around and away we'd go. And it'd be 40 below zero. Remember getting your equipment underneath the bus and it would be frozen solid?
We played one night in Brandon, the next night in Calgary, 13-hour bus ride.
Yeah.
And so after the first period in Calgary, we're losing, I don't know, lots to little. And our coach comes in and says, you guys got no legs, no energy. Oh, really? We're on the bus for 13 hours. It was the Western League was a hard.
It prepared us, Ray. It prepared us for what we were. I say it all the time. It prepared us. Those how tough it was to play back then, that when we first turned pro, and of course you played in a little bit in the American Hockey League, a little bit before you went on to Hartford and that, but it was a piece of cake once we turned pro from what we went through.
Well, the games were hard. The travel was hard. You're so young, like physically, you're just not able to withstand that a lot of the time. Mentally, you know, I'm 18, 19 years old. You're living away from home. It's not like now you could FaceTime your parents or, like the connection that you could have. Like, we never had any of that. I remember calling home after every game. I'd call collect.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm sure a lot
we
of
had the, no money. No
you
money.
You probably have no idea what collect calls are. You'd call the operator and say, I'd like to make a collect call, and you'd give them the number. And so my dad would answer and, you know, do you accept the charges? He would have to pay. And so he'd say, yes. Well, I turned pro. I signed with Hartford. I get to my first apartment and now I get called up. I'm in Hartford. I've got an apartment in the NHL. And one of my first phone calls was from my dad, and it's a collect call. And I get from the operator, he says, you know, do you have a collect call from Ed Ferraro? Do you accept? And I'm like, yeah. I'm like, Dad, is everything okay? He says, I've been waiting years to make a collect call to you.
Oh, that's great. Ray, we could talk so much about the old days, but you know what? We want to do a little rapid fire. Now, we got a lot of things we want to discuss, what your involvement is. Katie's going to start it off, and we're going to go back and forth. We got a lot of things we want to ask you in the time that we have.
Well, that was a fantastic story. Ray, you know, we just got through Women's Month and, you know, and what a month it was. I had the opportunity to talk to so many great women across sports do a round table. And it just really opened my eyes to some of the conversations that are so important. But, you know, I know that's something that's very important to you as well. You've spoken a lot on it. Obviously your wife, Cammy Granato, one of the all time, you know, women hockey legends, but just talk a little bit about the now for her, because obviously it wasn't always this way. And just, you know, what have you seen, you know, her just, you know, do in these last few years from the time that you met to the time that, you know, she, you know, became the first scout for the Kraken? And just, you know, what has that journey been like, and how have you gotten to see, you know, her grow, but also, you know, women's involvement grow?
The first piece of education I got was when I met Cammy. We were, she was actually the broadcaster in the radio broadcaster in Los Angeles off the 1998 Olympic gold medal that they won. And so I met her the next year in LA, and about a year and a bit later, she had gone back to playing. Mm-hmm. And I was in this gym in Los Angeles, and Luke Robitaille had told me I'd had some knee problems, and Luke Robitaille, the Hall of Famer, said, come see this guy. He'll help get your strength back, get your balance back. So I go to the gym, and Cammy's working out there. So we kind of reconnected. And my first lesson, though, was I couldn't believe how hard she worked when she was in the gym.
Yeah.
And I don't know why that was such a eye opener for me. Like, she's an Olympic athlete, right? Like, of course she would be working hard. But what I realized quickly was she's working every bit as hard as I am. The difference is I have a league. She didn't. There was nowhere to play between Olympics really competitively. And USA Hockey did virtually nothing with the women's game at that time.
Yeah.
So they would go long stretches without competitive games. So time goes on. Cammy and I get married. We have two young boys who are now 14 and 11. And she parked Cammy, the hockey player, for a decade. And she just wanted to throw everything into being mom. Mm-hmm. And our family is incredibly lucky for it. She's an amazing mom. And so the boys were looked after, and so looked after the way she wanted to look after the boys. Well, then she started, the boys are getting a little older, and she's like, you know, I can tip my toe back into this. And I think she was surprised how the hockey world wanted her back and how much they wanted her to be involved. Mm-hmm. And so she's been in touch over the years with the women playing on the US Olympic team, kind of a behind the curtain mentor to a lot of them. She's seen them grow, challenge, demand, and have support that they never got in 2000.
Yeah.
It wasn't there. And so she's incredibly proud of where these women are and the opportunities that are now here. And the one change I would say that's undeniable is what social media has done is not allowed the conversation to be talked about once and then pitched in the garbage can. Mm-hmm. There's a momentum to women's sports. There's the momentum to fairness that's not going to, it will not back off because social media will not let it happen. And it's the right thing to do. And it's not the right thing to do because, oh, let's give women's athletics a little bit more. Hell, the NCAA just screwed up terribly at the basketball women's Final Four. Like,
yeah.
How do we think that's going to fly? It doesn't. It won't. It can't. And so Cammy, what I've seen through her is the opportunities that are there are all so new that the pipeline isn't full yet, isn't full of candidates yet. But I can't tell you how many women have reached out to Cammy and said, How do I get to be a scout?
Mm-hmm.
How do I, because they can see what she's doing. If there is nobody scouting, why would a young woman think they could be an NHL scout? Well, now they know they can.
Yeah.
I was just before I got on this call, Cammy and I were talking about a couple of players of the game I was doing last night. And her knowledge is like, of course she can scout. Why can't she? I think in hockey, and Randy, you know, I mean, we've been around for a long time, but I think the thing we have to realize is we're not looking for people to to lift the most weight. We're looking for people that have expertise in the game. Yeah. And so if your pool of people is a bunch of guys that played in the NHL and that's it, you are missing an enormous talent pool that's sitting there in evaluation, that's sitting there in management skills, that connectivity through your organization. I don't know if you guys have had the opportunity to take a look at how the Seattle Kraken have hired their management teams and their front offices, their not public relations, their community build out, their Alex Mandrycki is their head of analytics. You look at the diversity and inclusion that Seattle is hiring in, that's not a one-off. That's the way it's going to be.
Yeah.
And they're going to hire the people they think are the best for the jobs. That's a long-winded answer to your question, but that's what
it's a good one.
That's what I feel is happening. And I'm seeing it through Tammy's eyes.
Yeah. And the game I think is really now heading in the right direction as far as that inclusion and especially with the women's a part of important roles and that's needed in our sport at all levels, whether it's at the NHL, collegiate, junior hockey, you name it, scouting, in management, evaluation, skills coaches. It's all really good.
It's not going to be very far down the road. I mean, I don't have a timeline, but there'll be a woman coach. There'll be a female
absolutely.
Coach.
And a general manager.
Yeah, GM. No doubt.
One thing with the GM thing, I think that's really important, and this is something I think we have to remember, is you can't go from not being in the game to being a general manager right away. There are now women that are working in more important roles through management, and they're sponging up experience and information. Yeah. And then eventually, there will be a candidate that will be undeniable. Now, Kim Ng, the GM in Florida in baseball.
Yeah,
correct.
She's been in baseball for 30 years.
Yeah.
Now, maybe she should have been hired 10 or 12 years ago. I don't know. But my point is, her experience in the game means she's qualified. There will be someone that will appear, and it won't be that far down the road. But more people are going to get hired into important roles that are going to be able to gain the experience to be a GM. It would be like you and I were broadcasters and saying, yeah, I could be a GM. No, I can't. I can't be a GM. What experience do I have running an organization, putting a scouting staff together?
Yeah, managing a salary cap and different.
You can't do that. And it would be impossible to think that there's a candidate, male or female, that has never done anything in management that could just be a GM. You have to gain experience, but now the opportunity to gain the experience is going to be there, and it is there.
Ray, it must be amazing living with someone that's really famous. Don't answer that. Hey, Ray.
I will tell you this. My younger guy, Randy, he's 11.
Yeah.
So he's asked me a couple of times, and you know, now he gets that I played hockey too.
Yeah.
You know, because he's more in tune that mom is in the Hall of Fame. And he's asked a couple of times, Dad, are you in the Hall of Fame? No, just your mom. Just your mom. When I go, I pay $35 like everybody else.
That's it. You know, Ray, you got a big presence on Twitter. What's your approach to social media and how we are, where we are right now? And the messages that are sent out, not only from you, from us and that, and where social media is, where it is now and where it's going.
Well, it's become a big part of all our lives, both for good and bad. Yeah. I've found over the last couple of years, the argument, the back and forth, like the chirp back and forth with the fan, I've pulled away from that. Yeah. I for no other reason that it gives me anxiety. It really does. To now all of a sudden I've let somebody I don't know come into my day and into my family's day and kind of get in my head. And now I'm arguing with somebody that I don't know. Somebody's saying things that they would never say to you face to face. They just wouldn't.
Exactly. Now,
I do like a lot of the interactions I get. What I've taken to doing is I direct message that person now, as opposed to to publicly answer. And I've had, man, I'm telling you, hundreds of good hockey conversations over the past couple of years with somebody that might say something that's maybe a little edgy, and I'll answer them. And then they go, oh, I never thought of that. Or they'll say, no, I think you're wrong. Now I'm in a conversation if I've got time for it. And I'm like, man, I've learned a lot from fans, but I'm not going to argue anymore. I mute. I don't delete. Right. I don't block anymore. I just mute.
And yeah, you have to mute. That's the key.
And then they can just yell into the wilderness, kind of like Homer Simpson's grandpa, right? They can just, you know, but the argument anymore, it's not there for me. I view this as like, if I were a player, I wouldn't have Twitter, or I'd have my mentions shut off. Why do I need some fan to tell me what a terrible player I am or what a great player I am? It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So the players, I think, that are involved in it, they've got to find a filter to be able to engage, because they'd like to engage. I think we forget, when we look at these players, they're all between 20 and 35 years old. Like, they're young people.
Right. And they want to be on social media. That's what everyone else their age is doing.
And so why wouldn't you? But you've got to have a filter, right? Like, I'm sure, like, you know, you guys are both, you're in the media, so you don't get all roses thrown at you.
Oh, no, certainly not.
And so you're like, if you read 10 good comments about yourself, you know, hey, you're doing a great job, you're doing a great job, you're doing a great job, and then one person says you suck. Why does that one carry more weight than the 10? But for me, it does.
It does. I agree.
And so that's where I've started to limit my interactions. I can't absorb it all. I don't have enough to absorb it all. And I'd be lying if I said I didn't care, because I do.
Yeah. But the teams,
Randy, that's the way to grow the game.
Absolutely.
You know, the team, the league, the more the league engages with social media, presents the players, tells more stories, I'd like to see them become more accessible through social media. I don't know if either of you have watched 1 second of F1 racing, car racing, in your lives.
Oh, Jameson, he would love to talk to you about this. That's our other guy.
I'm sure Jameson knows this series, and I'm telling you both, take 2 seconds on Netflix. Well, take an hour and watch the first episode. It's called F1 Drive to Survive.
Yeah.
And the reason I say this, the access that you get to the drivers and to what's going on is so incredible. I've become an F1 fan. I know two things: where my key goes, which you don't plug in anymore, and how you get in the car. I don't know anything else. I love it because I know I'm learning the drivers. I'm learning, you know, like the team principal, who's like the general manager of a team. I'm learning you like this guy, you don't like this guy. The head of Red Bull, he's married to one of the Spice Girls.
Yeah.
Who's now a Spice Woman.
What's about the people?
It is. And I think the NHL doesn't quite get that yet. Because you know what? I can watch the Florida Panthers play, and I love Barkov. What a player. I know very little about him.
Yeah.
I don't know enough about him. I know
there's still a little bit of that hesitancy, and they're guarded. They don't want to, especially, I find, and not to categorize them, they're so intelligent. The Europeans, especially the ones that are still haven't mastered the English language and that, and they are very, very hesitant because they don't want to make themselves look bad and then get the ridicule.
You understand that, right? Like, if we,
I still can't even speak the English language and that, and I make mistakes in that.
But think if you were in Finland and you were, you know, you're playing in Finland and the reporter wants to ask you a question and have you answer it in Finnish. Man, I'd be guarded too.
Because absolutely. You
know, each word is a search.
Yeah.
But I think the league could do a better job. If I were running that social media arm, I would tell everybody in it to watch that F1 series and say, how do we figure out how to do something like that? It is, I'm no paid advertiser for it. I've talked about this series for a year. I think it is It is one of the best sports series. Like, I'm sure we all loved in some way, shape, or form the Jordan documentary.
Yeah.
Amazing. Well, yes. It was because you saw all the footage. If it was a bunch of highlights, who cares?
Right.
It was about the footage of the people and the conflict and the resolution to the conflict and or not resolution, whatever it might have been. But that's 20 years ago with an iconic player.
Right.
It doesn't have to be an iconic player. Like, there are super interesting stories. And why can't there be one for each team? Or why can't there be, for example, say they say for the first 2 months of the season, we're going to follow the Central Division. And you build stories for 2 months on these guys. You show it because it's all been edited together in a really cool fashion. And people are like, wow, I didn't know he did that. I didn't know he knew him. It would be awesome.
Yeah. It's like the first time they introduced the 24/7 series with the Winter Classic, and you got to go into the room and you saw the personalities and the plane rides and little things that you just, you know, you never knew. And there were funny moments that I can still remember watching that as a Penguins fan at the time, just, you know, seeing the interactions between the guys playing their games and who's reading and, you know, who's playing cards, just those things. And I think we're definitely, you know, taking the steps to try to get there. And I mean, even with us here at the Panthers, trying to find ways with our Uncaged behind the scenes show, but there is still just that little bit of uncertainty and wanting to polish everything and make sure that, you know, you're putting your best foot forward, but also wanting to share the stories. So that's sort of the line.
Don't you think, Katie, though, that if they put those stories together and then, you know, the edit comes to make the story, there's somebody that's going to okay that to go to air.
Right.
There has to be a trust between broadcast and the players.
Yeah.
And there might be one thing that's going to make this, that will help make this happen. And that's escrow. And the more that the game grows, the more that the hockey revenues grow, the less escrow the players have to pay, the less salary they lose. Look, we're all well aware of what's going on with the pandemic. We're looking at, you know, revenues there's very few businesses that are in doing great during this pandemic.
Right.
So how do you build revenue? You build revenue with a connection. You build revenue with enthusiasm. Well, we're all watching on TV and I'm like, you know, you can only get connected so much. I was watching the game a couple of days ago, and I don't know how many fans are in the building, Randy, in Florida, but I'm like, man, to see people in there.
Four to 5,000 every game.
Yeah. And to hear a little bit of noise.
Yeah.
It's like, man, it's amazing. I miss that.
Oh, yeah.
That is. Hey, Ray, we've got a little time left here. A couple of comments from you. You covered excellent as well with TSN, the World Junior Championships. Mm-hmm. It was remarkable. It was unique because of the situation in the bubble and that. Your comments on Spencer Knight, who just signed with the Florida Panthers, and also with maybe a funny story that I think of only a few people have heard what happened to you at the World Junior Championships.
Oh, yes. Spencer Knight, I'll start with. don't forget Devin Levi, too.
Well, yeah.
Of course.
He hasn't signed yet, so he is not a...
Look at that. There's Florida's two goalie prospects standing 190 feet apart in the gold medal game.
Wild.
One of them a highly touted, one of them an underdog.
Right.
Correct.
And they were both fantastic in the tournament. Now, it was really interesting, Spencer Knight's tournament, because he started out, got pulled in the first game.
Yep.
And really wasn't great last year, like his pedigree would suggest. And the difference maturity-wise, and I think we forget this, he was 18 2 years ago, an 18-year-old kid. Now he's a 19-year-old kid. But the difference in maturity was really remarkable. He walked down the hallway because the benches were right across, and he was just gone. He went down the hallway after he got pulled. And then he came back, and it was like he composed himself, and he just sat there. He didn't look like he was pouting. He looked like he was just the backup goalie. And I noticed in that moment a maturity that I don't know would have been there a year ago. Now he gets back in the net, and each game he got a little better.
Mm-hmm.
Each game it seemed like it came easier to him, you know, and like the read of the play, the rebound control, his size, his athleticism.
Yeah.
He's really good. He's an excellent prospect. I'll tell you, I didn't know Devin Levi from the next guy on the street.
Most people didn't.
When the tournament's, you know, so Canada's got five goalies in camp. They get whacked with a COVID outbreak. They've got to shut everything down. So they picked the goalies. Like Devin Levi was not a highly touted guy, but they liked him and they liked his way. Well, he was going to be one of two or three that was going to fight for the starting job. They picked the team and they had these three guys. And he took the net and he just kept
it. Yeah, owned it.
Never gave it back.
He doesn't play like a small guy. He's really patient. Like he's not like when you see the two of them standing together, Knight and Levi. Levi looks like he's, you know, in a hole. Like Knight is a giant, and so, but he play. You know who he plays a bit like is Saros in Nashville.
Yeah,
he doesn't give away the top of the net, even though he's not very big. Mm-hmm. His read and reaction is incredibly quick. The one thing is whenever he gets to Florida, if you guys want to talk to him before a game, you got to talk to him really early. He's got to just think of this. He's got about a 2-hour stretching and preparation routine that he does. Can you imagine stretching for 2 hours?
Ray, you and I used to drink coffee and tell stories for an hour and 45 minutes.
And then somebody goes, hey, whoa, warm up. And you got to get dressed.
So a couple quick jumping jacks.
That's it. They've got two really good prospects here. Knight is not far from being an NHL ready backup. Take a look at Carter Hart though in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And the reason I mention him is Carter Hart is a tremendous goaltending prospect and the wheels have fallen off this year. He can't stop anything. And I think he's going to still be really good.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you have to be really careful about how much can they handle and how much failure can the goalie handle, because he's going to get lit up. Eventually he's going to get lit up in the NHL. It's going to happen, but everywhere he's been the best guy.
Right.
And so that's going to take a little bit of time, but I think they've got a tremendous prospect in Knight.
Funny story. Let's end it on a funny Ray Ferraro story.
So, good way to wrap it up.
Now, so we're in the bubble for 3 weeks. And so there's no gym, there's no restaurant, there's nothing. So TSN provides me with a bike in my room. Okay, so it was actually kind of easy to stay fit. I had nothing else to do. So, and there was lots of football playoffs going on around then. So I get on the bike and pedal for an hour. And then I had my bands and I do my workout and all that stuff. So it's also really dry in Alberta.
Yeah.
And so every morning I'd wake up and I'd have this headache and my sinuses were clogged. So I'd turn the shower on, steam it up. And so I'd go stand in the shower for 10 minutes till I didn't have a headache anymore, basically. So the last day we have to put the bike out in the hallway so they can take it back to wherever they had gotten it from. So that morning I get a call at about 5 a.m. from my son, Landon, who's playing in Germany. And we were talking about some stuff. And so I talked for like 40 minutes. And so I'm going to go back to bed. I'm like, oh, you know what? I'm up now, whatever. So it's like 5 a.m. I'm like, okay, I'm going to go to the shower. So I turn the shower on. And so it starts to steam. Well, now I'm like, oh, while I'm up, I might as well put the bike out in the hallway. So I get the bike and I push it forward. I wheel it out and I open the door. And now I'm not just going to push it in the hallway. I got to put it sideways next to the wall, right? So I go out, I turn sideways, I put the bike there. And just as I put the bike down, I hear click, the door's locked. I'm locked outside, which, I'm like, what a dummy. Now, the problem is I don't have any clothes on. None, zero. So now I'm standing in the hallway, and my first thought is, I try the door like it's going to magically unlock. Of course, it's still locked, right? So I'm like, what am I going to do, right? I'm in a hallway, and I'm naked. So I look down, and I see the house phone is down by the elevators. So I look around. There's nobody here, so I walk down the hallway. And I pick up the phone. Now, nobody's been in the hotel for 2 months, right, because of COVID. So I pick up the phone, no dial tone. Phone's not working. Now I'm like, now what? So as I'm walking back, I hear Craig Button, one of our commentators. I hear him on the phone in his room right by the elevator. I'm like, oh. So I bang on the door, no answer, but I can hear him. And then it clues in. He's on a radio interview. So he's not going to answer. Oh. So now I walk back down to my room. I grab the door. I try to open it again. It's still locked, right?
Shocking.
At this point, I realize, I bet you there's security cameras here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm like, so now I got to walk back down the hall to knock on Craig's door. So I'm trying to cover up and walk down the hallway. And I get down there. I bang on the door. He's still on the phone. So now I'm like, Craig, I'm trying to get him off the phone, you know. But he's doing his thing. I can hear him. Oh, I think it'll be a great game and all this babbling about. So now I walk back down the hallway and I go down where the service elevator is. And I'm like, I don't know, maybe there'll be something in here. I open the door. And again, the hotel has been empty for 2 months. There are these shelves that should be full of sheets.
Yeah.
And towels. Nothing.
No.
Corner, folded up in the corner, somebody's forgotten it, is a bath mat. So I'm like, now I feel like I'm saved, right? I'm like,
yeah. You're going to do the Tarzan. You got the Tarzan now.
At least I can sort of cover up a bit. So I cover up a bit and I walk down the hall. I bang on the door and I said to Craig, Craig finally answers. And I go, hey, I locked myself out of my room. And he's like, oh, okay. So I call down to the desk, hey, you know, I'm in room whatever I was, and I have locked myself out. And they go, okay, somebody will be up with a key. Well, at that point, Craig realizes I'm standing there in a bath mat.
Yeah.
And I've never seen him laugh like this. He's doubled over, hands on his knees. He's like, what the hell are you doing? So now I got to explain the story to him. And so he goes, grab a towel out of the bathroom, for crying out loud. So I put a towel around me. The guy comes up, just hands me the key. I'm sure he's like, you know, oh, well, whatever. You know, Dummy locked himself out. I was almost at the point now, how am I going to get, if Craig doesn't answer the door, how am I going to get in? I'm going to have to go down in the elevator. Hey, help, you know, and hope somebody comes. But somewhere along the way, guys, I realize I've got the steam shower on. What if it sets the fire alarm off? It's in the morning and I'm naked in the hallway.
Crazy person. That's incredible.
That is great. And just so you know, Ray, through my connections in Edmonton, I have the video from the cameras or whatever and that. So anybody that's listening that wants to blackmail Ray Ferraro there, just got to let me know.
He's got the footage.
I'm happy I'm in decent shape.
There you go.
Ray, it's always great to catch up with you. It's so much fun. We could have talked for 3-4 hours and that. Thank you for your time. We appreciate it. And good luck for the rest of the season and into the playoffs.
Thanks a lot. It was great to talk to you, Katie. Good to meet you. And
you too.
Somewhere soon, we get to see each other in a rink somewhere. Hopefully sooner than later. And I got to tell you, I am... I'm enjoying watching the Panthers. I'm enjoying watching my old teammates, Joel Quenneville and Ulf Samuelsson and Andrew Brunette, all of them old teammates in different places. And they've done an amazing job, and that team is fun to watch.
Well, thank Ray for joining us here. And Katie, it's always great to talk to Ray Ferraro. He is such a knowledge of what and the pulse of what's going on in hockey, not only in Canada, where he basically this year doing Canadian teams in that North Division, but also the pulse around the National Hockey League. He gets it. He understands it. And the way he can relate the stories that impact this sport is really impressive.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's got the gift of telling a story as well. I think we could have sat and listened to some of the, you know, junior hockey stories that both of you guys were giving us a little bit of a taste of for hours. You know, but again, you touched on it. Just he's so in touch with what's happening in the game and has a really unique and effective way of kind of explaining it. I really liked a lot of the analogies.
And how about he really explained in detail, well, the relationship that he has with his wife, Cammy, and the dynamic of her influence and her involvement in the NHL level and what she's done for hockey, not only in US, but around the world. It is a very interesting dynamic relationship that they really have.
Absolutely. I mean, talk about a hockey power couple. The wealth of knowledge between the two of them is incredible, but it's really wonderful to just, you know, hear the genuine, you know, enthusiasm and passion that he has for women in sports and how, you know, proud he is of Cammy and the accomplishments that she's made and just the steps that she's taking to continue to be, you know, a pioneer for, you know, for other women who are interested. Like he said, you know, she's a scout, and now there are young girls that see someone in a position they can visualize the opportunity for themselves in the future. And he just has a clear passion for, you know, spreading, you know, the information and just spreading the word, you know, about what she's done. And it's just really great to see. And I like when he talks about how his son says, "Dad, are you in the Hall of Fame?" "No, that's just your mom." That's the kind of stuff that, you know, you really can't make up. I mean, really great. And again, like you said, you know, an awesome person. We could have talked to him for quite a while.
Yeah. And I think, you know, Ray and I very similar coming out of junior high draft picks, a lot of promise, yet we had to work for everything that we got and to try and stay in the league. We were both traded a few times, bounced around a little bit. So there's a lot of similarities between Ray and myself, especially at the pro level.
And we were talking earlier about the trade deadline. You mentioned being traded a few times, you know, curious just, you know, from your perspective, you know, as a player in the National League, you know, what is it like, you know, going through, you know, a trade, you know, depending on what time it happens in the year, I'm assuming, you know, it can be different, but, you know, what's the experience like, you know, having to kind of pick up, leave everything and join a new team?
Well, I've told the story many times, Katie, that my first trade after playing 7 years in Quebec with the Nordiques, we were getting set for opening night in my eighth year there. Mm-hmm. And my second son was born just months before, and he was having some issues of colicky, the normal baby issues. And of course, my wife with my older son, who was just a little over a year older, it was quite a handful. And on the morning of our opening night, I was downstairs in our house in Quebec City, and I was feeding my son, Logan. And all of a sudden the phone rings, and it was the general manager of Quebec Nordiques at the time, Marty Madden. And he said, "Randy, we trade you to the New York Rangers." And I'm like, "Oh boy." And so I had to wake my wife up and tell her that I just got traded. And she really didn't understand, what does that mean? I said, "Well, I probably got to leave within an hour here to get to where the Rangers were starting the season in Winnipeg." All right. So let's fast forward. The general managers of Quebec said, don't talk to anybody. Neil Smith, the general manager of the New York Rangers, is going to call you here in 5 minutes. So I said, okay. So the phone rings and Neil Smith said, "Hey, Randy, welcome to the New York Rangers. We're excited to have you." That, you know, the usual conversation. Mm-hmm. And he could sense in my voice, Katie, that I was a little hesitant. And Neil Smith, the general manager, said, "Randy, what do you need?" And I said, "Well, I've got two very small infants here." And he says, "Tell me what you need." And I said, "I need my mother-in-law to be out here and to take care, because obviously the family's not coming with me, at least for the first part of the season." Right. And he said, "Whatever it takes, we'll do it." And he did. And he flew my mother-in-law out, got her there very, very quickly that day. I jumped on a plane. I had to fly from Quebec City to Montreal, Montreal to New York, take a limo downtown to Lenox Hill Hospital, get a full physical and medical, sign some papers, back to LaGuardia Airport, flew to Toronto, Toronto to Winnipeg, and got in at 2 o'clock in the morning. And we played, I played for the Rangers the next day. So
oh my gosh.
There's stories like that all over the place. Yeah. The second time I got traded was right a few days before the trading deadline from the Rangers to Buffalo. Mm-hmm. I came down to play a game and showed up and noticed that my jersey wasn't hanging up in my locker. The trainer at the time, Babe, Joe Murphy, said, Neil Smith needs to talk to you right away. So I kind of knew what was happening and went in and I was traded to the Buffalo Sabres. And the one thing I asked Neil Smith, I said, hey, can I take both my jerseys? He said, no problem. Babe was standing right there. The trainer got the two jerseys back home and packed up all my stuff and got an early morning flight. And then to Buffalo. And I was in the lineup that night against the Boston Bruins. So a lot of stories, very similar. It's difficult, especially when you have kids, when you have a family, to leave that suddenly. And I don't think people understand. When you get called, and maybe today is a little bit different because of COVID and what we're going through, but as soon as that call comes, you're probably on a plane within the next 2 hours. You're gone. And you get your stuff, you go down the rink, you gather up all your equipment, trainers meet you there, you jump in a cab, jump in a limo, jump in whatever you got, and right to the airport, and you're off to the next city for your new chapter in your NHL career.
Yeah, I think that's what stands out to me before, you know, I really started working in hockey was you think, oh, you get traded, you know, get your, you know, pack up your house, take a few days, join the team. No, it's instant. And it's crazy how quickly it happens. I mean, we've seen it. Guys will literally throw everything in their car and just drive if they can to get there as quickly as possible. And of course, it's different today with COVID, but, you know, if they can drive, they can skip through the protocol. And we're still seeing it, guys joining teams within, you know, 24 hours of trades and it's pretty remarkable. And social media also probably plays a part, you know, guys getting maybe a little bit of an idea what might be happening, maybe not quite as many surprises, but there's still always those unexpected phone calls. You never know, especially guys that maybe like Patrick Hornquist, for example, when he had a no move clause up in Pittsburgh and then gets the call, hey, we're looking to trade you. And then next thing you know, you're in South Florida. It's amazing how quickly the scenery can adjust for a lot of these players.
Yeah. And just to finish up on that, the players have to make, especially when they have no move, partial move, contracts, they've got to make up decision. It's not hours or days, it's minutes. And your life is changing. Your career is taking another turn and a lot of them, they adjust very quickly, but I know that that there's been a lot of players over the last number of years, and it continues today, that have really struggled with the change of scenery going from team to team.
Well, speaking of changes of scenery, we'll get into our next guest, Emily Kaplan from ESPN. And the exciting news, obviously, around the NHL is the new partnership with ESPN, the TV deal that's going to bring hockey to ESPN for the next 7 years. It's a really exciting deal that, you know, I know a lot of people are very excited about what ESPN is going to bring to the hockey scene. So we'll dive right in. Emily Kaplan, ESPN NHL writer.
Well, joining us now from ESPN TV that covers the NHL, great job, Emily Kaplan. And Emily, thanks for joining us here on our podcast around the National Hockey League with Randy and Katie. We want to get right into, we've got so many questions we want to ask you. Number one is, you're a Penn State grad. You've covered so many sports and with Sports Illustrated. Now with ESPN, how did you find yourself in the NHL niche covering the fastest game in the world?
Well, firstly, I appreciate you guys having me on. And I just like made a funny face when you said ESPN that covers hockey on TV, because it's still so surreal to me that's happening next year. But, you know, my first job out of college was covering the NFL for Sports Illustrated. And it was an awesome job. As you guys know, football is king in this country. Yeah. You can write about the fourth string tight end on any team and people would care. But ESPN noticed me there and they brought me in for an interview about football, for a football job. And They call me back a couple weeks or even months later, and they said, look, we don't have anything we think you'd take, but our biggest need right now is a national hockey reporter. And you mentioned a couple times in your interview that you love hockey. And I did, because if you really want to get into it, I'm a middle child, one of three girls, and a serious middle child complex. I thought my dad hated me. So inherently, to get closer to him, I'd watch Rangers games growing up because he loved hockey. Now, obviously, my dad's favorite. But yeah, that's pretty much my story of how I got to ESPN. And hockey was the sport I grew up watching. I loved it the most. It was the one I kept the biggest fan, you know, heart for as I became a journalist. So it's really a dream.
And it's perfect timing, because the National Hockey League and ESPN have signed a 7-year broadcasting and social media, everything platform agreement, and it starts next season. How excited are you both professionally and personally that there's going to be a big role for you in the coverage of the NHL?
Well, I hope so. And I, you know, I couldn't lie and say selfishly, this isn't something I had hoped and dreamed of. And it's great for our company, because I just think there's so many puck heads there. There's going to be so many opportunities to do cool things, and that's exciting. But I think it's just as great for the sport of hockey. We see the way that ESPN treats the sports its rights holders of, whether it's the NBA, the NFL. Look at the profile that's raised for the WNBA recently,
yeah.
UFC, since we got the rights. And so just, I know being in the ecosystem of ESPN, like, we're going to start, Stephen A. Smith is already talking about the Seattle Kraken. You know, I can't wait until he debates Andre Vasilevsky versus Sergei Bobrovsky. Like, that will be an awesome conversation to have. But just having the highlights on, you know, I've been in so many hockey locker rooms over the last 4 years, and I see ESPN on, and I know these guys are frustrated. They're not being talked about. They're not being shown. And we have a great opportunity to pump these guys up, to show the rest of America how great our sport is. And it's only going to help it grow.
And Emily, you talk about, you know, the obvious excitement around the TV deal, but for yourself personally, you know, you started out with, you know, strictly mainly being a writer, and have slowly over the years transitioned into this role of being on TV, and to take it to the highest level. You know, I've been on SportsCenter and around the horn. What was it like for you going from, you know, being more of a writer to adapting to this TV personality as well?
It's a great question, Katie. It's hard, and there's no blueprint for it. You know, I came up very traditionally. When I was at Penn State, you know, I worked for the school paper. My first byline wasn't even a byline. It was with the Associated Press, which is just straight news. And, you know, coming to ESPN, I've been so fortunate that with the platform and with my job, I've been able to like flex a couple different muscles, and I can inject opinion a little bit here and there, and I pick my spots. And around the horn has just been such a great place for that, because it's such a cool, inclusive environment. It's fun. It's fast paced. Gotta watch a lot of NBA games for it though, which I don't love. I'm a hockey person. But you know, and it's challenging, because, you know, in writing, I feel like I know how to put all of my facts, my nuance, I can get everything out there. And sometimes on TV, I'm given a 30-second soundbite, and I'm like, how do I share everything I know? So it's been a lot of self-editing, a lot of self-talk. You know, you have to be confident on TV. You have to know that your face is going to be out there, and people are going to make a judgment on you in 2 seconds and maybe tweet at you, and their opinion doesn't matter as much as your opinion matters of yourself.
Completely agree. And we've touched on that in the past, how social media can really make an impact on anyone that's in the spotlight like that. But, you know, for yourself, you actually had a pretty strong start when you made your very first appearance. When you went on Around the Horn for the first time, did you ever anticipate you'd actually be winning? And just, can you tell us a little bit about what that was like?
No, I was so intimidated to go on that show. Like, to that point, it was, I want to say 2 years ago now in the playoffs, time is a warp. But I was in Columbus covering the Blue Jackets, and they called me and they said, okay, can you do the show next Tuesday? And I was like, you can only do the show in certain areas like Miami, New York, Dallas, wherever there's a camera. And I was like, oh no, I'm in Columbus, I can't. And if I'd asked my editor, I'm sure he would have sent me back to Chicago and I could have done it. But I was just so intimidated, and I was told, you know, look, you can say no once, but don't say no twice. You just got to jump into it. Yeah. And I've been so fortunate. A lot of people on that show have been great mentors, and they've shared their tips and how they prepare. And, you know, the hardest thing is just being authentic in yourself and not being rehearsed and being knowledgeable at the same time. And that's not something I'm mastering, because I study like hell beforehand, because I just want to make sure if I'm going on TV, I know what I'm talking about. I still make mistakes though. I'm really embarrassed to say, I said Justin Spieth on my last show. That was just embarrassing. I know who Jordan Spieth is.
Hey, I've done it before too. I think I called Brett Connolly Mike Connolly last season, but I mean, you do your best.
Exactly. I make 5, 6, 7 mistakes every broadcast.
But you know what,
Emily, here's some advice I give to everybody. As long as your voice is loud and you sound convincing, that's the only thing you need to do.
It's so all about confidence, right?
It is.
Projecting confidence. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, it's been another unique season in the National Hockey League and the world that we're living in right now. We'd love to get your thoughts on the NHL and it maybe expanded as well of as we inch towards the playoffs. We've got some interesting races. Who are some of the top teams that you've seen and covered that you believe are going to be at the top and maybe go the distance in the playoffs?
You know, I'm not just saying this because you guys are so close to the Florida Panthers, but I feel like the teams in that division, the top three, have been three of the most interesting teams to watch, the most dynamic teams to watch. I'm talking obviously about the Lightning, Canes, and Panthers. And I just think whoever emerges out of that side of the bracket and, you know, that first two rounds, it's going to be incredible. And I think that team will have been battle-tested and have a really good shot. And then the other two teams that really stand out to me are in the West. And it's the Colorado Avalanche and the Vegas Golden Knights. I just think they're firing at different levels right now. They've got a lot of depth. I think the Colorado Avalanche need to get a goalie before Monday. I just think they're one Philip Grubauer away from injury away from disaster like they were in last year's playoffs, but we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, it's certainly an interesting dynamic as you approach the season, especially given the season that it's been with the games, just so many games at once. How for yourself have you managed to handle this much hockey happening in this short of a span?
You know, it's funny because it does feel like a lot, but now we're so far into the pandemic, it feels like we've been like we were first taking hockey away and we didn't have it for so long and I missed it so bad. And live sports, you realize how much become a fabric of your day-to-day life and your routines. And then when it came back last summer at that fast and furious pace, I just was eating it all up. And this year it's hard. I do feel like sometimes I'm like, I haven't seen a St. Louis Blues game in like a week, but like, how can I? There's just so many games on. So I'm trying to consume it the best I can. Thank goodness for many devices. Like I'm always, you know, in the pandemic, you're just trying to find ways to get outside and be active. And I've learned that you can take NHL TV on your phone on a walk around the block. And that has been my secret to staying sane and staying updated.
Emily, we touched on the ESPN and the NHL partnership that will kick off for next season. Without giving any confidential information or whatever, how do you see your role is such an important role with your knowledge of hockey? How do you see your role going to expand or change with the coverage of the NHL on ESPN?
It's a great question because I still don't know all the answers to. I know what I'd love to do, and I'd love just to be able to contribute to so many more shows. And I think that's what excites me the most. There was a show Outside the Lines Friday 4 that I used to do. It fly out to Bristol every Friday. And they would always they would ask us what topics we wanted to talk about. And I'd always bring up hockey. And it would only be able to make the show a couple times because they're like, well, it's just going to be hard. We don't have rights, so we can't use B-roll or highlights. So like, it's just not going to be a good segment. And now those conversations won't be happening because we have it all. And we have access, to all of that stuff. I love the opportunity to try different things and flex different muscles. Sideline reporting or ringside reporting is something I think would be really, really cool. But just being on the site and being, around the game production for the Stanley Cup final on our network, it's something I'm really going to cherish and it's just going to be surreal. And I can't believe it's like a year away.
You know, and to follow up on that, Emily, it's not just so the fans understand, it's not just a terrestrial TV coverage that's going to be very expanded in that, but there's so many other platforms that are going on that we're going to see in the streaming and everything that goes that we're heading to in the future and how the sports fan, how they consume sports in all platforms. it opens up a whole new world. And I think that's what, and I'm sure that's the same thing with you, that makes it so exciting, because the consumer now is very demanding. It's like the microwave. They want it hot. They want it now. And but I think the and especially what we've heard, the partnership between ESPN and the National Hockey League, is I think that the fans are going to be overwhelmed with the information and the content that's going to be provided.
I agree with everything you just said. And you're right. Streaming is at the heart of this deal. Like, yes, it's going to be great that ABC and ESPN airs the Stanley Cup final, but instead of going to NHL TV to stream games, you're going to ESPN Plus. And I think what's really cool about that specifically is ESPN Plus, we show UFC fights exclusive to that. In our new NFL deal, there's going to be some exclusive aspects of the NFL package that are on ESPN Plus. So think of all those fans who are now becoming conditioned to come to this app. And if they can just happen upon a hockey game, or they can happen upon a really cool preview show, or In the Crease with Linda Cohen, or whatever offerings we have there that, like you said, are going to be a little more non-traditional. Maybe there wasn't room for them on linear TV. It's just going to open so many doors to people getting exposure to a sport. And again, like, if you ask any hockey people, all they want to do is grow the sport and spread the gospel of how great it is. Like, this, I think, aligns with that.
Absolutely. And I think you touched on it. There's so many really great opportunities that are going to just essentially open up a whole new pool of fans that are going to allow the sport to grow. And I think people underestimate how many hockey fans there are out here in the U.S. So looking forward to expanding that. To wrap things up, you know, we're not too far removed from Women's in Sports Month and Women's Month. And we've done so much great coverage of all the women that are impacting the games. But, you know, I've heard you talk in the past about some mentors of yours that have really been important in your journey, Ramona Shelburne being one of them. I would love to hear just a little bit about how, you know, mentors have impacted your journey, and then also maybe a little bit of an advice, you know, that you can give now to girls who want to be where you are.
Yeah. Ramona's a great, when I came to ESPN, I told my editor, I want to, like, who do you want to model your game after, right? We always ask that to athletes. And I was like, I want to model my game after the way Ramona Shelburne covers the NBA. And ESPN is amazing because they were like, okay, we're going to invest in you. Go on a 2-day trip to LA and shadow her. And it was just incredible. Like, I went to the studio, she's doing the jump. And then afterwards we got lunch. And during lunch, I just saw her work. She was just picking up the phone. Sorry, this is like the LA Lakers GM. Like, I have to take this, and making these texts to players. And she's always working. But the one thing I took away from her, and I think this would be the advice I'd also give to young women trying to get into this industry, is be authentic and be yourselves. And if we learn, if I've learned anything about athletes and coaches, they just value transparency. They don't need to agree with why something happens. They just want to know why. And the way Ramona treats her job is like, this is who I am. Sometimes I'm loud and brash. Sometimes I'm annoying. Sometimes I'm hilarious. I'm also a mom. I'm sloppy. I'm late, whatever it is. She is who she is. And I think that that's the reason she's so well connected and has so many relationships, because she doesn't pretend to be someone she's not. And that's something that I think women, it's so hard. And, you know, you feel like you need to say the right things or you need to do the right things. But if you just show who you truly are, and you don't know what you don't know, and ask for help along the way, you're going to make it far.
Emily, this has been absolutely fantastic. We can't wait to have you on our podcast again. We're just starting our journey together, and we're so happy that you were able to join us today in our podcast around the National Hockey League.
No, congrats on the podcast. I'm so honored. I'm one of the first guests. Honestly, this might be the big career achievement for me. So I appreciate both of you guys, and so looking forward to when I can see you at a rink. Yes.
Thank you very much for joining us.
Well, thanks so much to Emily Kaplan. Really enjoying chatting with her, and love what she's brought to the coverage of the NHL. Always, as you know, as a woman in sports, great to see another woman who loves hockey and is clearly so knowledgeable and passionate. She's doing a great job with ESPN, so we thank her for joining us. And Randy, we talked about it with Emily, but, you know, just a really exciting time, this ESPN deal and the streaming and the social, just so many opportunities to really broaden that, you know, viewership for the hockey, you know, for the sport of hockey here, you know, across the U.S.
Well, ESPN, they do it the best. They have so many different platforms to engage the fans and all the sports that they cover, and it will be no different the way they cover the National Hockey League. I love the enthusiasm, the passion of Emily Kaplan and what she will bring. She's a big component of what ESPN is going to try and succeed at in their partnership with the National Hockey League. I'm giddy. I'm happy for her. I'm excited. And you can tell that she's really excited as well. And it's a great partnership. It broadens the fan base exposure for the National Hockey League. I think that they've needed in all the different platforms over the last couple of years as this game continues to grow all over the world.
Yeah, and we had a great time talking with her. I can tell right away she's going to be a longtime friend of the program. We'll definitely be hearing from her again in the future. But, you know, as we look to the future, obviously, you know, the next time we record one of these, Randy, we'll be right on the cusp of some incredibly exciting hockey. The playoffs will just be probably gearing up. So, you know, to wrap up today, I just want to get some maybe final thoughts from you and maybe a little bit of a look at what we, you know, can be expecting, you know, coming up in the near future.
Well, on this podcast, we got through the trade deadline and talked a little bit about the movers and shakers and what's going on in the NHL. Our next podcast, yes, Katie, we'll be right on the cusp of the playoffs and we'll dive deep into the playoff races that no doubt will go right down to the last games as they always do and playoff positioning. We'll include all the divisions and there's going to be some great storylines. So we want everybody to tune in for our next podcast as we get set for the Stanley Cup playoffs. Thanks so much for joining us for the first episode of Around the NHL with Red Deer Randy Moeller and Katie Gause. And remember, to get new episodes delivered directly to your phone or inbox, make sure to subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcast from. For Katie Gause, I'm Randy Moeller, saying so long from around the NHL.